You'll have to excuse my voice a little bit. A lot of people would like me to lose it all the way, but I haven't done that. I'm going to report it out of closed session. In a unanimous vote, the board approved Resolution 2014-15-23, release of administrators for the 2015-2016 school year. Okay, we do. Is our student representative, she present? Okay, we're past that. School report, Kynoch Elementary.
Good evening. This is like the happiest time of the year for me. I love doing school board reports, even though I'm still nervous. But it's really an opportunity for a school to show how they shine and for you to get a glimpse of the school. But I do invite all of you anytime. Come by and visit. Come see our program. Come see what the kids are up to. You will be impressed. So here's my speech. Good evening, members of the board, Dr. Todd, Mr. Carrion, Mr. DiGiulio, and members of the audience. It's my honor to present a small look at Kynoch School for you tonight. First, I would like to introduce to you our, and I want these people to stand in their groups, our Kynoch staff, our Kynoch students, and our Kynoch parents. Please stand. Thank you. As you can see, they're quite excited about what they do and the job they do as a parent, as a student, and as a teacher and staff member. We will start with our Kynoch News, developed and brought to you by reporters Alyssa Mendez and Christina Hatfield, produced by our assistant principal, Pete Pantoja. I just want to say a giant thank you to the board and the LCAP committees who made it possible for Kynoch, with 670 students and 60 staff members, to have an assistant principal. Mr. Pantoja is a... I think they kind of like him. Mr. Pantoja is a talented, amazingly creative addition to our Kynoch staff. So the video is his baby, so he will present that.
Hello, board members. Dr. Todd, Mr. Carrion, Mr. DiGiulio. First, I'd like to thank all of you guys for giving me an opportunity, and Mrs. Oaks, at working at such a wonderful school. Little over a year ago, I started a video announcement project that brought news and information to staff and students. We're able to deliver important announcements in an entertaining way. So what you're going to see is an example of one of those newscasts. And while you can't get everything into a video, I really hope that you see a glimpse into Kynoch and the wonderful school that it is. I'd like to acknowledge Alyssa Mendez and Christina Hatfield for their hard work and dedication. So if they could stand up, please, and give them a round of applause. They do an outstanding job, and it's a lot of work to put one of these together, so hopefully you enjoy the video.
Thank you. Dean. College is a great school with wonderful staff and students. Oh, and Mrs. Oaks and Mr. Ventura are okay too.
Thank you to Mr. Pantoja and our reporters, our famous reporters. Right now, I'd like to introduce Ms. Beth Emert and Mr. Dios, Mr. Martinez, there. Two days a week, we have music at Kynoch. We have woodwinds with Mr. Martinez, and we have violins with Ms. Emert. And her students are here tonight to perform one song. Here we go. Which song did they decide?
We're doing two simple variations.
Okay. Thank you.
good.
Sit down, Jim.
So I'd like to thank all the parents for bringing their students out so that they could participate in this. Being able to play like this and perform is really important to kids that do music, that they're able to perform and have an audience. So thank you, audience, and thank you, parents, for bringing your students. Okay, so that's the end of our presentation. If you have any questions for me, I'd be glad to answer them.
No we'll questions? Have to stop by and see the progress.
That'd be great. Yeah. Anytime. Just let me know what you want to see.
Don't you have a talent show coming up at Kynoch?
We have the talent show. Did you see it up there? The judges
I thought that was
had
last
popcorn.
Year.
Popcorn. No, that was this year.
Oh.
So and Haley right here. Haley, you need to talk to Mr. Rex right there. She was her and her partner were first place with a dance routine.
Oh, okay.
So she needs to come to yours.
And she knows about the other talent show.
Yes, we have another talent show that they're having at McKinney.
Yeah.
That you could enter. Right? Yeah. Okay, I'll show you the paperwork.
Monica, thank you. Thanks for taking care of my granddaughter every day. You're great. Thank you.
Thank you for sharing her. We love what we do at Kynoch School. Thank you for letting us share with you.
Thanks.
Good night.
Thank you.
Good program.
Okay, we're going to go back just a little bit and get our rep to the board's school report. Okay.
So the Lyndhurst High School board report. February 26th was our first blood drive of the year, and it was successful. There were plenty of sign-ups, and thanks to those who participated, many lives were saved. March 4th was our Yuba Gardens tours for the incoming freshmen. We greeted them kindly and made them feel welcomed. March 5th was our President's Council meeting. Upcoming events, today is our winter sports banquet and orientation night for the incoming freshmen. March 12th is our Student Senate meeting. On March 17th through the 18th, we will have our Kahizi testing for the sophomores. March 19th, there will be a noontime activity at lunch. Currently, we are planning our big event, which is Lyndhurst High School Powder Puff Game and Carnival on March 27th. The varsity game, which will be juniors versus seniors, will be held at 5 p.m. at the Dean Miller Stadium, LHS. The community and club carnival begins at 5 p.m., and there will be an awesome halftime show. The entrance fee will only be $1, and all that is collected will be donated to the Yes We Can charity. After the game, our music department will be presenting You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown, in our C building. Also that night will be our Sadie's Hawkins dance, and there is no board report for Marysville High School.
Thank you very much. Okay, moving on, we have the Lyndhurst WASC update. Okay, Mr. Eckhart.
Good evening. What we wanted to do was give you an update on our WASC accreditation visit, which, as you know, happened in October. Without going through the full ramifications of what WASC is, we've done that before. The short version is it is for our accreditation status. A team comes in, we compile a report, and based on what they see and what they hear and on the criteria, they issue us a accreditation status. But more importantly, they also give us areas of improvement, which are called critical areas of follow-up. Those are what we would call our mandates or our marching orders. In other words, the process is about reflection. It's not about the event. It's not about the one-day WASC visit or the 3 days or however that works out. It's about where are you and where do they feel that you need to go next in terms of to be the strongest school that you can possibly be. So I'm going to take you through a little bit of history. Over the last 6 years since the last WASC, just to kind of frame it in, there was that economic crisis. We all felt it. It was awful. And it doesn't matter what chair you were sitting in, it was not fun in any stretch of the imagination. At Lyndhurst High School, we lost 4.6 teachers, full at times FTE. In addition to that, we lost the junior ROTC program, which was a full-time teacher as well. The ROTC program loss, while we were in declining enrollment, we saw a big drop after that. There was clearly a spike. Overall, our school lost 28 academic sections. Those were things that we just couldn't offer to students, which included accelerated programs as well as intervention programs. That was over the last 6 years. I wanted to frame that in. Within those same 6 years, 2008 to 2014, our exit exam rates for math went up 8%. Our exit exam rates for English went up 4%. Our student attendance went up. Suspensions went down. Graduation rate went up, and dropout rate was cut in half. That was over those last 6 years. With that, with our accreditation, we received a 2-year accreditation. We will be presenting a follow-up progress report in 2017. And I'll be honest with you. This is a whole different criteria now, and it's a whole different process in terms of the accreditations you get. Getting a 2, I'll be honest, it hurt. It stung. That's not something you want to get or to feel, especially when you put so much love and so much work into it. But it is what it is, and we move forward. We don't move back, and we don't give excuses. We expect that of our students, and we expect that of ourselves. We continue to move forward. So that you have a general idea of what the accreditation cycles look like. At the very top, 6 year, no follow-up needed. Everything, they just moving on. The next step down from that is a 6 year, 1 day visit. In the middle, it's a 3 year, at year 3. Then below that, it's a 6 year, but they want to come back for a 2 day visit. They need a little bit more follow-up. Then you have where we are, 2 year, in-depth progress report, and that will be for us 2016. Below that is a 1 year probationary, which means they would come back the next year, and then obviously the last one being accreditation withheld. Okay. So we fall with a 2 year probationary. We're moving forward. What they did is not only compiling the report, they say, okay, where are your strengths and where are your weaknesses when they're giving us our areas for critical follow-up? These are what they identified as the strengths of Lyndhurst High School. These are the things in which they pointed out and clearly identified, with this material you already have, you will be able to achieve. You can make it. Build off of your strengths. I'm not going to go through them all, but if you look through it, the general theme is the staff, the staff, the staff. We are together, as you see. We stand united. We stand with each other. We are ready, and we are moving forward. We are developing new things. We are banking on our passions. We are forming our passions. The one thing that they called us out on, they said, the hardest thing that you guys would have to work with is a love and a caring for the students. That's the hardest thing to get, is a staff that unifies like that. We were exemplary in that end. They said, you know what? The staff loves you. The students love you, and the staff loves the students. That's the cornerstone, and we are building on that. There are some areas that could lead to a struggle. Most of these areas we've addressed in our action plan, which we'll talk about later. Okay, we need more parent involvement. We're taking steps for that. We'll talk a little bit about that. We need an action plan. We needed a more specific action plan. What exactly are you going to do, and is it touching everybody? Is it really getting all of your subgroups? We need to have appropriate, collaborative, not only leadership, but time. We need to build that time in to yoke our strengths. Okay? The resources to address our facility issues. Okay? And the last one, that just is what it is. They put it in there, so I'm not going to change their document, and I'm not going to really dwell on that. Our staff is strong. I don't think that's an issue. And I don't believe my staff feels that's an issue either. Our areas for critical follow-up, we're going to go one by one. Some folks will be talking about that. These are our four areas. And to address those individually, first I'd like to introduce you to David Atkinson, our physics teacher, AP physics teacher as well, and our science department chair.
Thank you. So, with the need for professional development, recently we've had a lot of luck because we've had more development in the last year than we've had in a long time. We have a lot of departments going off to get help. We have English, we have math, because they've been, Common Core has put some pressure on them to do that. But we have now PE looking at conferences to go to. We have the English Learners Department looking in the same situation. We have career tech, people looking for places to build themselves. We had a science training with Marysville High over at Yuba Gardens. And we're sending a group of people to an AP conference in Bellevue this summer, hopefully. I think that's going to happen. And so these AP conferences are really valuable. All this stuff is, it's a new development to have this much of it available to us. And it would be nice if that kind of became the norm. We're not going to be able to continue improving and doing the things that we're supposed to be doing unless we have these opportunities to continue developing. On that, the time for collaboration, I think, is another key thing we need to have. We need to have paid time to collaborate within our departments to build new units of study, because almost every core area of study in our school, and everywhere in the country actually right now, is facing Common Core and next generation science. And so we're going to have to reinvent a whole lot of stuff that we do, and there's no way around the fact that that requires time. And we need time within our departments, we need time across town, we need to work with the people across the street at Marysville. I know that there is a willingness, at least in the science departments in both places, to talk and work and collaborate, and we need that time. I think one possibility is that maybe if we're already spending 4 days of professional development over the summer, maybe we could spend those 4 days in collaboration. I understand that we'd have to develop plans, and we'd have to have some coherent goals and strategies and things that we expect to come out of this with, but that's not a problem. We can do that kind of thing. And so I think that these 4 days that we spend over the summer, previously in professional development here or at one of the sites in the district, maybe we could offer teachers the chance to get developed somewhere, maybe at an AP conference, and we'll pay for those days, or in collaboration with other departments on other campuses or within your own department on campus and across the district. So these are things that we need to do. This is directly from the action or the critical areas of growth that the WAS committee gave us. We need to develop and collaborate, and that time needs to be made available to us. We need, probably most desperately, more teachers. We need more teachers and more sections, and we need more classes that are different and offer a diversity of pathways for our students to go through. It seems like in the years when they cut, what gets cut is never the core areas of study, because we can't cut those things. And so then we narrow our study down to, well, from some points of view, the boring stuff. And so when we take away these opportunities for more career tech classes, we need that stuff back. We need to have a variety of classes for students to take. We need more teachers on our campus to be able to offer those things, because in some cases we can develop a class, but that class has to come at the expense of another one, because adding an FTE is out of the question. It always has been out of the question. And so if you're going to develop a class that maybe only applies to 14 students or 15 students, it's almost a no out of the box, because we can't afford to cut that section from somewhere else. Some other class has to die, or some department has to have all their class sizes raised by 5 or 6 in order to accommodate this one class. And so we pitch it, and we don't offer that class to those 15 kids. Sometimes that's advanced placement biology. That class didn't get 22 signups last year and only had 17, so it didn't go. And so it'd be great if we didn't have to make those concessions anymore. If we had the opportunity to just add these classes to give a diversity of academic pathways. We're starting. We have these college classes we've brought in from Yuba College. We've got an engineering class and a computer science class and a culinary arts class. These are great things, but that's just a start. We need much more as far as the diversity of what we offer kids. If we tell kids what they offer in other districts and we tell kids what were offered here 20 years ago, it upsets them, because they're missing out. They're losing all that opportunity to take classes that they wouldn't normally get to take. There's no class where a bunch of rowdy guys get out there with hammers and tape measures and start framing up garages. But that's what a lot of guys in our area need. This is what our community is rich in, is that kind of character. So we need this kind of stuff. We need to be able to develop this. And my hope is that the impetus for this doesn't fade when WASC season goes away. This is something that we need to, it's a change that we need to have kind of all the way across and from here out. And I'm addressing you specifically, and I've emailed you all. Maybe you guys read it, but this is what we need. We need this change, and if we're going to push these things to happen, it's got to happen this way, I think. One of the other criticisms we got was actually directly addressing our work inside the classroom and how we utilize the California standards for the teaching profession in our rooms. And so this one's a tough one to take because it is directly talking about how you teach your classes. And so we need work on this. But I think the collaboration time will help with this if we're developing our CSTPs. We already do this with the Stolbills, but maybe we can incorporate the use of Stolbills into some more development as a staff. Common Core and Next Generation Science will help with that because those new styles of delivery where we're trying to incorporate more styles of learning and all sorts of different students with different activities, that stuff's all rolled in there. So we need to self-reflect there, and that's the plan. We need time. We need teachers. And I think it's possible. I think we can make some amazing things happen here, but we need the staff and the time to do that. Thank you for your time.
Hi, I'm Wendy Erke. I'm a physical education teacher as well as the department chair for physical education at Lyndhurst High School. And Atkinson hit a lot of points that are going to be kind of covered underneath this as well. But we realized that when we went through this WASC accreditation program thing, we figured out that there were some things that were missing in our report and that we are addressing now. We are now meeting on a monthly basis within our departments as well as a staff and going over some ideas that we have planned. And some of those things, so we're meeting, we met in December, and this was kind of like the awakening for me. I probably wouldn't be here if there wasn't a time where I actually got to take out, sit down, and be with a group of like 20 teachers and staff where we actually got to figure things out and have a group discussion and actually go, hey, that's what's going on over there. Wow, I need to bring that back to my department and use this information and create something. I sent it off to my, was so excited over it that I sent it off to my bosses and they, got with it. So our department has changed since we've been meeting since December. And I know that all of our departments are changing right now, and a lot of energy is going into that. We have created a career tech educational goal, and through that, we're talking about like our new classes that Mr. Atkinson had talked about with culinary arts and our engineering and science class that we're going to be introducing next year, and our computer literacy. These are classes that kids need. They absolutely need. We are hitting the students that are going through college to a two-year and a four-year. There's 80% of our students, but there's 20% of our students that we really need to focus on getting those new classes offered and brought to our school. And we got three of them, but I really like to see a ton more because that's the 20%. Even the ones that go to college, they're more likely to use the skills that they learn in high school through these classes and get those jobs. And that's what I look at. We are focusing getting together in our WASC groups to talk about like the special ed program, the English language learners, the AP students in response to the action plan. So we are addressing these situations in these WASC meetings. We brought in programs that are still kind of in the works, so it takes a couple years to just get it established, get those kids to buy in, get our staff to buy in, and everybody on the same page. But I see that through our advisory program that's meeting in the mornings. On Tuesdays and Thursdays, those kids, I'm tapping into kids that I probably would not have tapped into through that program. PBIS, that is a huge momentum builder for our students. They want to pick up trash, open doors, they're held accountable by positive role models as well as you know, they're becoming really good citizens at our school. The Get Focused, Stay Focused is a career class that we're going to be offering next year. It's kind of going to be focused more for junior college, like through, it's actually affiliated with the junior colleges, and it's a 10-year program where students are going to be going and building a 10-year plan so that they know where their options are later on in life, even if it is, you know, they change gears and so forth. So this is a great program we're going to be offering. Again, we are monthly WASC committee meetings. We're creating ownership. I would not be here if I didn't feel like I own part of this. And on the other hand, we want to bring back that community into Lyndhurst High School. We really do. And by that, we've offered coffee with the principal so the parents can come in and talk and discuss anything they want with the principal, ELAC. We have the Boosters Club, which is a huge selling point right now. Our Boosters Club is kind of doing a revamp, and it's like we've got a lot of momentum built into that right now. And just a heads up, May 8th, that we're doing a fundraiser. It's spaghetti feed, and tickets will be sold soon. So anyways, I wanted to make sure that you guys understand that we're changing. There's a lot of energy here in this group, let alone everybody else at Lyndhurst that's not here. And yeah, I'm ready.
Yeah, I can see your enthusiasm, but we could be a little briefer on that. Okay? How about going down the list?
If you want to pass a soccer ball around, we'll do that then.
All right. Thanks.
I don't think you have any trouble talking at all. That's good.
The last area that WASC centered as a critical area of follow-up was kind of an unusual one because it does not center around the school site or the authority of the school site, specifically indicating that resources were needed to invest in the repair of the continuing facility problems such as broken HVAC system, our pavement, ultimately ensuring a comfortable environment that's conducive to learning. Just to kind of get you an update here, I've been working with Ryan DiGiulio, with Gay Todd, with Terry Billidoux, with Cynthia Jensen, and these are just some of the things that are going on right now. Lyndhurst High School bus loop and the trash container and a student safe passage, they're currently in design. HVAC units and controls for the site, excluding our D building, that's a whole different beast, they're currently in design. With D building, we're trying to figure out how to get some of those things working. Okay. In other words, we're trying to work on getting things, you know, things are moving forward. There's an energy audit that's been done and it's been concluded. Exterior lighting and possibly gym lighting, those things are also being quoted. There's a redesign and renovation of the quad as well as our gas lines and exterior paint as part of the 5-year plan. Okay. That's very, very important because together we make Lyndhurst stronger. Okay, this isn't a Lyndhurst High School thing. This has everything to do with the teachers. This has everything to do with the students. This has everything to do with the administration. This has everything to do with the board and everyone else at the district office. You don't go through a WASC alone. Okay, we are in this together. We greatly appreciate the support that we've been receiving. It makes a difference. It really, truly does make a difference. And on behalf of myself, I would like to thank you all very much for your time, and to the staff and teachers. Love you guys. Questions?
Any questions from the board?
Mr. Eckert, I would just like to commend you and your staff for all of this hard work because it is so important to our students to get this accreditation, and it is not an easy task. But thank you very much for all your efforts.
It's nice to see the numbers of supporters that you have here, too. I mean, that really shows a lot.
Thank you.
Good.
I also appreciate your efforts. I know that we've had numerous conversations here lately, very soul-searching conversations, and I see a lot of change. And the one thing that I did notice over the years when I went out there and I would ask the same question to every school, what do you like best about this school? Lyndhurst High School, I heard from the kids continually, was it's about the staff they care. I was so impressed about 3 years ago. I came in front of your staff
and told him it was the same question I heard all the time. And I know there's a plan to really get the parents involved. I've had some mention the plan. Your May fundraiser, I know the Linda Lions Club is going to support that. The ROTC, to get that back is going to be huge. And I know that the Linda Lions Club is writing a letter of support. The Board of Supervisors, I've been asked as the senior board member for the Olive First area. That was a huge loss when you took that loss. And in order to be successful, we have to give you the tools. And I realize this year it's very hard to say run this school and then some of the tools were gone. And I'm glad that we'll be able to put them back. And I look forward to positive things happening out there.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Comments from board members? Mr. Danimal?
Just to the Lyndhurst staff, I would like to say I had the privilege of serving on the first in the 70s, and I know how hard it is, how many hours you put in, Robert. It's no fun. Keep up the good work, because it's not easy. Thank you very much.
Okay. Mr. Boom? Okay, Mr. Rasmussen?
Yes, I just wanted to, isn't it March 27th that your drama department has a show going at 7 o'clock, I think?
Yeah.
Is it?
You're a Good Man,
Friday?
Charlie Brown. 7 okay. o'clock on C-106.
How many nights, Chrissy?
Thank you.
Hey, you guys can sit down if you'd like it. Mr. Fleury?
No.
No comments? Okay, Mr. Harris? The one comment I have, I know a lot of the board members over the last week or so have read a lot of Dr. Seuss down at the elementary schools. I had the privilege of going to Covelot, and the kids were outstanding. And I didn't have to read Green Eggs and Ham. I got a different one. So that was good. And that's all I have. Okay, that brings us to opportunities for employee organizations to address the board. Marysville Unified Teachers Association.
Good evening, school board members, our teachers, our parents and students. We have also some other district personnel and some community members. I'm glad everybody is here this evening. My name is Angela Stiegel. I'm vice president of the Marysville Unified Teachers Association. I'm here this evening to present our unit's presentation to the board as prepared by Inga Schlesler, our president. Most of you are aware of the fact that Inga has just been battling illness for weeks and weeks now. And last week, she was just telling me how she actually thought she was feeling much better. And apparently yesterday, she proved herself wrong. She had a little episode as she defined it, at work. And she got to be a temporary guest at Rideout Hospital for a few hours. And she is home resting comfortably this evening. She again has assured me that she is feeling much better. I'm going to wait and see about the results before I proclaim that. She did want me to make sure to thank people, though, for their patience and understanding due to missed appointments, missed meetings, that she will get those rescheduled as soon as she can, and that she also wanted me to thank people. She has received messages from people, concerned, caring, kind words to kind of cheer her along, and she said she wanted to make sure to thank people for that. This evening, as we all know, most of our presentations have a theme, and tonight's is no different. As you can see, tonight's theme is smart or balanced, which of course is a little wordplay on smarter balanced, which is the assessment consortium to which the state of California belongs. So this evening, we have, as our presentation, a little mini assessment for the school board members. So we hope you're willing to participate with us. We do. My trusty assistant was right behind me. I'm used to high school students. They're much noisier than that. They don't generally get to creep up on me. So Amanda is handing out our mini assessment for the school board members, and Susan, who, along with another mini assistant, is handing out pencils. So if you could make sure to go along with us, we would really appreciate it. I do apologize that our assessment is still the old school paper and pencil. UTA isn't quite as advanced as SBAC in the state of California would like us to be, but we're still a little old school. And so you should have your materials ready. And for our audience members who would be interested in taking the assessment along with our board members, we do have it on our PowerPoint. So we should be ready to go. So our first question, complete this statement. Compared to 7 years ago, MJUSD currently spends A, an equivalent amount on teacher salaries, B, approximately $2 million more on teacher salaries, C, approximately $1.6 million less on teacher salaries, or D, approximately $3 million less on teacher salaries. If I had a timer, I'd give you 7 seconds, just because that's what I'm used to with Academic Decathlon. And our answer is C. You know, they always say, if you don't know, pick C. Go with C. And approximately $1.6 million less spent on teacher salaries. And as we have noted at the bottom there, it's sad that there are people in the room who would actually not be shocked if D were the correct answer. So on to question two. We'll just keep chugging right along as we tell our students, just power through. Which statement is true for MJUSD? Teacher salaries are equivalent to the state average. B, teacher salaries are 4% lower than the state average. C, teacher salaries are 6% lower than the state average. D, teacher salaries are 8% lower than the state average. I should have brought like Alex Trebek music. See?
Excuse me, ma'am. We have legal counsel here. I see many of your questions deal with the current negotiations, and I'm not quite sure if
not that I'm aware.
To fill this out. Did he leave? Just to be on the safe side, I have.
Okay.
I love surveys.
Are we settled?
I don't know. Carry on. Is there any problem with?
Well, so far, questions one and two would not. Those are just factual statements.
No problem in participating. I don't want to get anybody in trouble.
Got it. I promise I won't get you in trouble. Just like I promise Inga's going to be better tomorrow. So teacher salaries are 8% lower than the state average. I'm actually going to hope she is. She's been sick way too long. Specific numbers to go along with that last question. Well, the average teacher in California earned $69,435 last year. The average Marysville teacher earned $64,435, which, of course, is $5,000 less, which is 8%. Question three, which statement is true for MJUSD? A, superintendent salary is equivalent to the state average. B, superintendent salary is 8% lower than the state average. C, superintendent salary is 22% higher than the state average. D, superintendent salary is 8% higher than the state average. People have a moment to think. And answer again is C. Superintendent salary is 22% higher than the state average. And the numbers to go with that, while the average superintendent in California earned $167,000 last year, the Marysville superintendent earned $203,509. That's a little over $36,500 more, or 22% more. Our next question is a fill-in-the-blank. Rank these public servants from lowest 1 to highest 5 annual salary. California Superintendent of Public Instruction, Tom Torlakson, the U.S. Secretary of Education, Arne Duncan, the Director of the FBI, James Comey, MJUSD Superintendent, Gay Todd, Secretary of Defense, Ashton Carter. So you have a second to kind of bubble through, people think about it. And this is what the numbers look like. So the very bottom would be our state superintendent of public instruction. He makes a little over $151,000, followed by the director of the FBI at just under $179,000. And then we have a tie. The U.S. Secretary of Education and the Secretary of Defense both make just under $200,000, and then the superintendent comes in at a little over $203,500. And so we have our fourth question. In 2013-14, MJUSD was required to have an unrestricted reserve of $9.7 million. A for true, B for false. And That would be false. The required reserve for economic uncertainty was $2.3 million. And in question five, what was the actual unrestricted reserve for 2013-2014? A, $4.6 million, B, $9.2 million, C, $9.7 million, or D, $13.2 million? Actually, $9.7 million, which is 320% more than required. And another note, if you thought the answer was $13.2 million, you're thinking of the total reserve. Question six, how has teacher net income changed over the last 4 years? A, plus 2%, B, plus 3.8%, C, minus 4%, or D, none of the above? And we actually find out it is D, none of the above. And the factoid, due to overwhelming increases in healthcare costs, not inclusive of inflation, teachers' net income has decreased approximately 10.67%. And on to question seven, how has the district's revenue changed this year? A, minus 2%, B, plus 11%, C, plus 4%, or D, remain flat? And some of you may remember this from earlier presentations, it is plus 11%. Eight, how much is the district offering teachers this year? This is multiple choice question. Looking at A, 10.67%, restoring cuts due to health premiums. B, 11%, which is equivalent to the increase the district received. C, 8%, providing our teachers with last year's state average. Or D, 4%, and a little question mark. And the answer is actually 4%. And it's a mystery from where this number was pulled. We're not 100% sure. Which takes us to question nine. And question nine gets a little lengthier. What do teachers want? A, to be respected as professionals. B, to be valued for their contribution. C, to perform their best for their students. D, to trust in the district for which they work. E, to not have to fight the district every year. F, to be paid a competitive salary and assisted fairly with the increases in health benefits. Or G, all of the above. And the audience overwhelmingly got the question correct, which is all of the above. And as we have put on there, I'm sure there's more. We probably could go through the alphabet at least a couple more times. And number 10, again, another lengthy one. What does the district get when teachers have what they want? A, healthier teachers with goodwill toward the district. B, a stronger ability to attract and retain high-quality teachers. C, larger classroom budgets. D, happy teachers with no need to fight over funds. E, a higher level of confidence from teachers. Or F, all of the above. Again, we have hit a question with all of the above. With a side note, district would also get fewer presentations by Inga. It's her words, not mine. And so now question 11. This is our higher order thinking. This is where we're actually going to no longer be choosing C. You're going to choose one task and use the lines provided on your assessment page to complete it. Use a minimum of three accurate pieces of data to support your claim or claims. Number one, defend the Marysville Joint Unified School District's offer of 4%. Or, number two, describe the details of a fair and adequate offer that would make teachers whole. Or, number three, provide a justification for paying the superintendent of this district 22% more than the average California superintendent while the teachers are paid 8% below average. Inga has said that if people would like to submit their assessments to her at a later time, that you could just drop them in the district mail. She will get them. That is the end of the assessment. And the question, of course, how did you do? So as we often do with our students, we go through our answers. So there's the answers, your answer key for you. Of course, number 11, answers will vary. And our last statement for the evening, MJUSD need not wait any longer to make its teachers whole. There's no reason to hold funding back for next year. Ongoing help with the minimum health plans and a minimum of 8% to equal last year's California average is easily done. Thanks, board members, for your time. And again, thank you, everybody, for your support.
Okay, operating engineers, local number 3, California School Employees Association. Oh, here we go. Okay, sorry.
Hi, I'm Mike Minton with the Operating Engineers Local 3, and I don't come to all of these meetings, and I wasn't going to say anything at this one, but I would just like to reiterate what was just put out there as far as the employees that I represent, as far down as the teachers are toward the bottom of the rung. You need to remember there's another group that's even further below them, and that would be the confidential employees of this who have always been over backwards to do what they think is the right thing to do for this district, and they will continue to do so, but they are reaching a point where they've their saturation for being pushed aside is that's why we haven't settled yet either. They've pretty much mandated that they're going to wait, and we're going to wait and see what's going to happen with your decision, and then they will make some decisions on what they intend to do as well. So thank you very much.
California School Employees Association 326 and 648. Okay, Association of Management and Confidential Employees. Supervisory Unit. Okay, we have 4 public comment cards. Okay, remember that you are restricted to 3 minutes, and we're going to have to time it. So if you are not done at the end of 3 minutes, you're going to hear a bell, and we'll go from there in order to get all the comments in. Okay, first up, Mr. Terry Villadue.
I'm here to talk about proposed cuts. Is this working? In the maintenance department, we take care of 23 schools and over 1 million square foot of buildings. Our first priorities are safety, health, and security. We have an outside consultant that actually comes to our schools and inspects them. They come from the insurance company. When I came to work here in 2007, this was a write-up. There's literally hundreds and hundreds of things that they found wrong. This last year, same company, same consultant, this is our write-up. This is an outside consultant not paid for by the district. When I started here as a maintenance director, these write-ups were just overwhelming. Now they're actually looking at eliminating my position. None of the people who made this happen are in the agenda for taking over the maintenance department. It's actually something that was done by the maintenance crew and myself. As a crew, we average over 3,000 completed work orders a year. In my time here, that's over 21,000 work orders. We average more than 80 completed projects a year. That's 560 completed projects. The maintenance department has earned 53 certifications for its staff. There's 12 guys. That number is up 600% from when I came here. Under my leadership, our department is better trained and more valuable to the district than it was when I started. When I started in 2007, we had a budget of $3 million. Since then, our budget has been cut in less than half, and now we've got just a smidgen of it back. Somehow we managed to survive the cuts that dropped the budget so low that we shouldn't have been able to operate. The condition of our facilities as a district is a direct result of those cuts, not the negligence of the maintenance department or the site's leadership. We had to take care of the safety, the health, and the security first. The cosmetics had to come last. Now what we have is just over half of our budget returned. Personnel restructuring is being recommended to the board. It's going to include 1 executive director, a director of facilities to help spend the deferred maintenance money, and a supervisor over the maintenance department. That is something that was originally managed by just one director and one supervisor. In the past several years, I've ran my department as good as I could. We've utilized honesty, integrity, and transparency. We've always been open to the board.
You wrap it up, Terry.
I'm asking you again this week, please do not cut my job. Let maintenance go back to the structure it was that worked so well. If I have to come before you again, I'm probably going to ask the teachers' union to put together a nice PowerPoint for me. They did a great job.
Thank you, Terry.
Thank you.
Hey, next up we have Christina Slay. Christina?
Good evening. Yes, thank you for that plug for our show, You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown. We're really looking forward to it and working hard. Tonight I am here to speak on behalf of maybe some of the younger teachers regarding our health insurance, so if you will please hear me out, I will appreciate that. Yes, got it. Okay. Good evening. I'm Christina Slay. I am 30 years old, and I'm the director of music at Lyndhurst High School. One of the things I love about teaching through music is that my ensembles start with a bunch of strangers, and in the fall, and by the spring, we are one cohesive group that works together for the success of a common goal. We are a little family, just like life in a school. The last thing I ask of my students is that they take care of each other, and that is why I'm here tonight. Tonight, I ask the board to reconsider how the district approaches health care for its teachers. I ask you to think about your own families and how you would feel when you hear that your child, who has worked their whole life to earn their dream job, is giving up over $600 a month in health care costs and as the only person on that health plan. That your child doesn't have an option to a personal health care plan that will cost less because of restrictions, or that in order to be able to pay the rest of their bills, they have to take a lower health plan and hope that they won't have any emergencies or extra doctor's needs because they can't afford the out-of-pocket expenses. Tonight, I ask you to think about your families, more importantly, your children and grandchildren. If this district wants to retain young and passionate teachers for the benefits of your families, then please consider the rising costs of health insurance and the strain it is truly putting on our young teachers. I want to continue being a part of this community and family, but I need to be able to pay my bills. Please don't forget the newest members of the teaching family. Thank you.
Okay, I wish I could make some comments, but not tonight. Jim Carpenter, okay, you're up.
Good evening, trustees, Dr. Todd, Mr. Romero, Mr. DiGiulio. I think most of you know me. Tonight I'm coming as a MUTA member, the treasurer, and a member of the bargaining team. At our bargaining session last Wednesday, we were asked how we would know that our membership would not approve the district's last offer. I'd like to answer that here. We know because every month, as Mr. Fleury can confirm, we meet with representatives of our membership from their various work sites. We share what is going on in the district and listen to concerns from the schools. All this year, the number of those concerns has been growing steadily. We know because at trainings, department meetings, staff meetings, articulation meetings, on playgrounds and in staff rooms, these concerns are repeated hundreds of times throughout the district. Our members are intelligent, well-educated professionals who understand the realities of today's economic environment. They're caring, concerned individuals who have been willing to make sacrifices when necessary, but expect to be made whole when the opportunity arises. Thanks to the many layoffs of recent years, the vast majority of our membership was here through the lean years. They remember giving up part of their paychecks when you said you were going into the hole financially.
They also remember that at the end of that school year, your ending balance had grown by nearly the same amount as they gave up. That year, I remember, due to a large increase in health care premiums in addition to the pay cut, I saw a $400 decrease in my monthly take-home pay. That memory, to a greater or lesser degree, is part of the psyche of all of our members who were here at that time. And we know, because 2 years ago, when our bargaining team agreed to your offer of 2% on salary and $100 increase to our health care, wouldn't that have been nice? Without any retroactivity, our membership felt we should have received more. A vote to approve a tentative agreement is usually overwhelmingly approving. That vote was not. After we agreed to this, you received more money from the state, and we were unable to bargain any of it. After that, I heard from many other teachers that if they had known you were going to get more without sharing any of it, they would not have voted to approve that agreement. At the bargaining table, we were told that you regret the increases to our health care costs, but that this is common in today's world and beyond your control. And this, of course, is true. We were also told that the only way MUTA could receive more than your last offer would be at the expense of other bargaining units. This is not true. I will go. I have a copy of what I have said and what I intend to say. And if you'll pass these along, everybody can have
them. Thank you. Okay, next we have Brian Hatch. Brian.
I'm one of the older teachers that's still young at heart.
Amen.
Yeah. My oldest son once told me that, Dad, you are annoyingly optimistic. And I guess I'm here again because I'm going to be annoyingly optimistic. You've heard a lot of information. It's as plain as the nose on each of our faces. The offer is not adequate. Double it would probably get closer. I've been here long enough to remember when we went to impasse and fact-finding and vote of no confidence in the previous superintendent and almost going to strike till finally, shazam, an offer was made. Do we really have to go there? Think of all the hard feelings. Those of you that were there at that time, you remember. It does not do anything for morale. And it's completely unnecessary when you've been presented with the facts that the money is there. There's no reason not to do that. Dr. Todd, with all due respect, I don't think that you or you guys need a Me Too clause, whatever we get. You've been compensated more than adequately. And my upbringing has been you treat other people as you would want to be treated. The other part of that is that when you have the ability to do something about it, you do the right thing. And lastly, I don't know what else I can say to just say, you know, the teachers are, if I can use a military analogy, are the boots on the ground. And every leadership worth their salt takes care of their people. So I'm asking you, don't put out a piddly slap in the face offer. Do what you can do to really help us out. Thank you.
Okay, we have to move on. Okay, superintendent's report.
Thank you very much.
Well, it's hard to believe, but it's time to start thinking about promotions from eighth grade and graduations. And so I will pass the schedule around for you to sign up for sites that you would like to participate in their ceremonies.
Okay, that's.
I'll just wait a minute. I'll get them. As you know, the Yuba County Board of Supervisors has been struggling lately to come up with some revisions to their current medical marijuana cultivation ordinance, and so at the request of a board member, and I also believe that it is important, did send a letter that was read today to Supervisor John Nicoletti, and let me just read you very briefly the letter. Dear Yuba County Board of Supervisors, as you consider changes in the current Yuba County Medical Marijuana Cultivation Ordinance, I would respectfully request that you take into consideration the setback distances from school sites and bus loading and unloading locations. Our bus stops must meet specific requirements before they are approved by the California Highway Patrol, and as such, are not easily moved. Not only are our students fearful of unattended guard dogs at grow locations near bus stops, but the increased traffic on our roadways in and around our schools makes for a very dangerous environment for our students. Thank you for considering my request on behalf of 9,400 students in the Marysville Joint Unified School District. So that was sent today and read to the council, and hopefully they will take that into consideration as we try to keep our students safe at all times. Well, for at least one other board member who was at the Yuba Gardens Warrior Pride dinner, and Ms. Carrion was there as well, our local DJ, they had a very successful fundraising activity, and I'll tell you, they're setting the bar pretty high for the Education Foundation. They raised $23,000 in one night. It was truly amazing, the money that they were able to bring in. And all of the money that they raise goes for their PBIS program, which supports incentives to help students realize that, you know, good behavior does have its rewards. And so certainly that money will be put to good use. Earlier on that day, Dr. Jack Stokes' Celebration of Life ceremony took place out at Peachtree Golf and Country Club, and it was a packed house. Well over 300 people there. I mean, it was standing room only, and certainly you couldn't, I don't think, get another person in there. In lieu of flowers, the Stokes family had asked that folks send funds to the Education Foundation earmarked for the Dr. Jack Stokes Fund, which will be used to help students who would have ordinarily gone to Alicia School, which is where Jack did the bulk of his time as an administrator. And so that will go for Linda and Cedar Lane students who want to go to Shady Creek but may not have quite the amount of funds that they need in order to participate. So to date, we have $1,485 that have come in. So certainly Jack is still making a very significant mark on children's lives. And unfortunately, I think Christina Slay left. I've been out and around, but I went out and met specifically with her to talk about what is it she needs in her music program. You know, they've been working hard to start building a program. She's been there 4 years. And I must tell you, I was shocked by the lack of equipment. The chairs were ragtag, pieced together, certainly something that we need, and we are doing something about. Before we start adding to our music program, I think it's important that we provide the support for our current music programs. And so Lyndhurst and Yuba Gardens we need to work to help build those programs. Yuba Gardens program has gone away over the years, and certainly we have allocated through the LCAP funds monies to provide a teacher, but you know, it's going to be difficult for that teacher when the program has been raided. There are very few workable instruments there. There's no chairs that are appropriate for students and helping them to learn proper posture when they're playing their instruments. So we are looking at beginning to refurbish that program and bring it back to the glory days of when Lyndhurst had an amazing marching band, and Christina Slay has done an amazing job trying to rebuild that. So I think we'll see that pay off in great fashion. So with that, that's the end of my report. Thank you, Mr. President.
Okay, that brings us to the consent agenda. Would anybody care to pull anything on the
approval of minutes?
Oh, excuse me. I apologize. Approval of minutes from the board meeting of 2/24/15.
So moved.
Is there a second? Okay.
Who's second? Mr. Rasmussen. Thank you.
All those in favor, raise your hand.
Aye.
One abstention, Mr. Harris.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Consent agenda.
And now to the consent agenda. Would anybody like to move to the consent agenda? I think you're right. Okay, let me try that again. Would anybody like anything pulled from the consent agenda?
Yes, under student discipline and attendance, item number one, school site safety plans.
Okay. Any others that would like to have pulled? I'd like to pull personnel services number one. Okay, if there's no other items to be pulled, why don't we do the rest of the consent agenda except items two under education, item one under student discipline and item one under personnel services. Is there a motion?
Motion to approve.
Oh, too bad. Mr. Daniel, got it. Is there a second? Mr. Rasmussen? Okay, all those in favor, please raise your hands. Aye. Okay, and this brings us back to student discipline and attendance, number one. Mr. Rasmussen.
So, Ms. Carey, on the only real, just two items that I had on that. We had an example, I believe, of one of the site plans, and I would just like to make sure that the names and numbers are accurate. It seems like there was some old names for district personnel that was in this site plan. And the other thing that I think would be helpful, if maybe the number or the pages were numbered, so I could say, Ms. Carrion, on page 12, we still have an old employee. Or I think in a situation that emergency has arisen. If you're trying to talk with somebody on the phone or trying to, you can say refer to your packet on page 13. So
the numbers are correct in the emergency booklets that are in the classrooms. This is from our DTS, and so I have to email when there's a change or whatever. I have to email the system, and they have to make the change. So sometimes they'll make changes I don't even know about, or it'll revert back because they roll over the next year. So I think they're all correct at this point, so I don't know, because somebody might have called me on that, but if you let me know which ones are not in that, then I will email him to correct those. I try to keep up with all the changes mid-year, so.
Well, and there's a lot of site plans and a lot of, there's a lot there.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll be happy to show you in this.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Like I said, I don't get to go in there and change it. I have to email them to change it. So, through them. Anyway, are there any questions?
So with that, I'd make a motion to approve student discipline and attendance, item number one, 2014-15, school site safety plans.
Is there a second?
I'll second, Dan.
Mr. Boone, second. Okay, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Oh, yeah. I'll second that, too.
Then you have to stay. Okay.
Good.
That's because there's a lot of hot air, I guess. Okay, I pulled Personnel Services number one. I'd like to recognize Senor Barañón, our Spanish teacher at Marysville High School, who taught there 37 years. I worked with him throughout my career. He came 1 year after I started at Marysville, and he's still there. I wish him a great retirement. And with that, I'll move to approve Personnel Services number one. Is there a second? Mr. Boom, second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. That brings us to new business. Okay, my voice is getting a little tough to get out there, but I'll try to leave the mic on. New business number one for the Board of Trustees, a vote for CSPA Delegate Assembly, Subregion 4C. We have three choices on this. We can vote for the candidate who's listed. We can vote for a write-in candidate, or we can choose not to submit a ballot. So why don't we try that first? All those board members, by consensus, who would like to...
How about I make a motion?
Yeah, go ahead.
I'll make a motion that we vote or approve Sharman Kobayashi.
I'll second that.
If there's no objection, then I'll call for the question. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Well, that was easier than I thought. Item 2, Resolution 2014-15-24, excuse board members' attendance at meeting of the Board of Trustees.
Motion to approve.
I'll second that.
It's been moved by Mr. Boom and seconded by Mr. Crawford.
Mr. Danable.
Mr. Danable. Okay, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. With one abstention. Okay, Purchasing Department, Resolution 2014-15-25, school bus purchase. I'm not sure if, do we have someone that wants to speak to that, Ms. Wright?
Okay. Ms. Cartwright's here, but I'll speak to it really quickly. We have the one bus we're purchasing through the AQMD grant, and then we have the two special needs buses that we're purchasing with one-time monies. This is a piggybacking, this allows us to use a piggybackable contract. Hemet Unified went out to bid for these items, and so the responder, the manufacturer, decided to allow that price to go out to all California school districts. So we're just following the law. Instead of going, incurring the expense of going to bid, we're using what was already bid to purchase those buses.
We've done this before, and it's always been to our advantage. Okay. If there's no other comments, the board will entertain a motion.
Motion to approve.
Mr. Boom moves to
second.
And Mr. Daniel will second. All those in favor of the motion?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. No nays. Nutrition Services, number one. Okay. Board Policy 5030, Student Wellness. Okay.
So...
open to public. This is a public hearing. Anybody would like to make some comments about student wellness?
With that, too, we do have a presentation prepared as we bring this new board policy, this revised board policy before you. That's been a lot of hard work for our student coordinated school health council. And it's been led by our director of nutrition services. She's brought a couple members with her tonight, so I'll have her come up and provide a presentation that really highlights the work of the group and what this new policy, revised policy, brings to the district.
Good evening. Thank you. MJUSD's current student wellness policy requires revision to meet changes reflected from the Healthy Hunger Free Kids Act of 2010. The district's Coordinated School Health and Wellness Committee was reconvened and tasked with preparing the revisions for public review and approval by the board. Members of the committee here tonight to help present are Jennifer St. Lawrence, district nurse, Jerry Eccles, Marysville High Nutrition Site Manager, and Leslie Pring, Community Nutrition Advisor from the Dairy Council, and myself, Amber Watson, Director of Nutrition Services. We will be presenting on the background of why school wellness is important, the benefits of healthy students, the required components of the policy, and share the committee's work and future steps. There is a health crisis among children in our nation. Childhood obesity has been a problem, and unfortunately, it continues to be a problem. We're here to talk about our district's role in supporting student wellness and at school and beyond.
Hi. So before we get into the effects of obesity on children and adolescents, it's important to go over the basic definitions of overweight and obese. So overweight is having extra body weight for a particular height from fat, muscle, bone, or water. And obese is having a high amount of excess body fat. Energy balance occurs when the amount of energy an individual consumes through eating and drinking equals the amount of energy an individual's body uses for growing, metabolism, everyday activity. Weight gain may occur when individuals consume more calories through their diet than they exert. As this imbalance continues over time, an individual increases his or her risk of becoming overweight or obese. Childhood obesity has dramatically increased since the 1960s. In 2008, the percentage of youth who were classified as obese was more than four times greater than it was 50 years ago. 4.2% of youth aged 6 to 11 were obese in 1970, and in 2008, that number was 19.6%. 4.6% of youth aged 12 to 19 were obese in 1970, and in 2008, 18.1% of the youth were obese. As of 2012, about 33%, or 1 in 3 children and adolescents, are obese or overweight. Obesity affects people of all races, ethnicities, and income levels in all 50 states. Children and adolescents who are obese have a 70 to 80% chance of becoming obese or overweight as adults. With the rising rates of obesity in children, we are seeing more youth develop health problems that were previously not seen until adulthood. The public health focus on childhood obesity reflects concerns for children's health and its effects on academic performance, not just their physical appearance. Obesity in children and adolescents is linked with a number of problems, including high cholesterol, type 2 diabetes, high blood pressure, sleep apnea, and poor self-esteem related to social stigma and bullying. High cholesterol, diabetes, and high blood pressure all cause damage to the body's blood vessels, which increases the risk for heart attack and stroke. And by the time symptoms are evident, damage has been occurring often for many, many years. Youth that are overweight or obese miss more days of school and are more likely to have poor academic performance than youth who are at a healthy weight. Obesity, hypertension, and diabetes have an interdependent relationship with sleep apnea. Sleep apnea is a disease that reduces the quality of sleep and decreases oxygenation to the body, including the brain. It negatively affects the youth development related to cognition, hyperactivity, and causes a generalized deterioration of memory and learning. Math scores and self-reported school problems are significantly worse for youth who have sleep apnea. The capacity to respond to daily developmental challenges are reduced, and the likelihood of engaging in negative behaviors such as school absenteeism, smoking, drinking, drug use, and delinquency are increased in youth who have low self-esteem. There is a demonstrated increase in school performance when there is an increase in self-esteem, and school performance decreases as unhealthy weight increases. Healthy eating and regular physical activity play a powerful role in preventing chronic disease and improving the likelihood for success academically and socially throughout the lifespan.
Many sectors of our society make up environment we experience every day. We can make positive changes to our environment that can help reduce and prevent obesity. Families, healthcare organizations, the media, religious and our faith-based organizations, businesses, local government, community organizations, and schools can all affect a child's activity level, diet, and overall health. Although not the only entity responsible for targeting childhood obesity, schools do play a role in the overall health of children and adolescents. Schools may be one of the most effective settings in a community to decrease preventable health problems such as obesity among students. Health is academic because helping young people stay healthy is a fundamental part of a mission in our schools. Healthy behaviors are associated with academic achievement. School health programs can help improve students' academic achievement. Health behaviors clearly influence the quality of life for youth and the ability to contribute to life and productively in society. Evidence has shown that specific dietary practices and issues are related to different aspects of academic achievement. Specifically, student participation in the USD school breakfast program is associated with increased academic grades and standard tests, scores, reduced absenteeism, and improved cognitive function. Skipping breakfast is associated with decreased cognitive performance, such as alertness, attention, memory, and problem solving. Lack of adequate consumption of specific foods, such as fruits, vegetables, or dairy products, is associated with lower grades. Deficient of specific nutrients like vitamin A, B6, B12, vitamin C, folate, iron, zinc, and calcium are associated with lower grades and higher rates of absenteeism and tardiness. Too many words. Hunger due to insufficient food intake is associated with lower grades, higher rates of absenteeism, repeating a grade, and an inability to focus. Taking a closer look at the evidence, specifically physical activity practices are linked to different aspects of academic achievement. Students who are physically active tend to have better grades, school attendance, cognitive performances, and classroom behaviors. Higher physical activity and physical fitness levels are associated with improved cognitive performances such as concentration and memory. More participation in physical education class has been associated with better grades, standardized test scores, and classroom behavior. Time spent in recess has been shown to positively affect students' cognitive performances, attention and concentration, and classroom behaviors, not misbehaving. Participation in extracurricular physical activity, such as interscholastic sports, has been associated with higher GPAs, lower dropout rates, and fewer disciplinary problems.
So what is the Healthy Hunger Kids Free Act? We must be asking that. It is a public law that was enacted in 2010 of December. It is Section 204, Local School Wellness Policy. So each district that participates in USDA's school meal program, such as Marysville, is required to establish a local school wellness policy. The difference between the 2010 and the 2004 Child Nutrition WIC reauthorization requires that schools strengthen their already existing local school wellness policy and add requirements starting from 2010. Those requirements of being public participation, transparency, and implementation. So what is the requirements of the 2010? So one is goals for nutrition education, physical activity, and other school-based activities. Nutrition standards that promote student health and reduce childhood obesity. So with the local school wellness policy is to include these goals and added the goals for nutrition promotion. Districts must establish nutrition guidelines that limit amount of calories, fat, saturated fat, trans fat, and sugar in foods sold on campus, outside of school lunch program, and during the school day. There are new federal guidelines for foods sold on campus called Smart Snacks in Schools, which add restrictions on the amount of sodium permitted in food and sugar permitted in beverages. In addition, beverage portion sizes are also limited. These restrictions can be found in Exhibit 5030-2. What is required? In addition to the previous other requirements, now is to include parents, students, food service, PE teachers, school health professionals, school board members, school administrators, and general public in the development, implementation, and periodic review and update of the policy, which we have started this school year. And lastly is to inform and update the public, including parents, students, and community, about the content and implementation.
It is now a requirement to inform about the content and implementation of the local school wellness policy, and also moving forward that to do that yearly as well. What is required? So, and then also with the evaluation of being required, which was not previously required in the 2004 local school wellness policy, the purpose is to strengthen the local school wellness policy to make sure that it's enacted every school year, and to periodically measure the implementation of the school wellness policy throughout the district at each school site. So the extent to which schools are now in compliance with the school wellness policy, extent to which the district's policy compares to the model policy, and lastly, description of progress made in attaining goals of the policy. And also, part of the evaluation is to designate one or more official to ensure that each school complies with the policy. This will help with the reporting and updating as we move forward with the local school wellness policy.
The district recognizes that in order to meet the requirements of this policy, there must be coordination between several departments and programs, as well as using resources outside our district to support the development and implementation of the policy. The committee that established the original policy was reconvened with the additions of a couple key groups: health services, counseling, psychological and social services, healthy and safe school environment, and health promotion of staff. The committee has had three very productive meetings this year, with two more scheduled. We have recognized the vast difference in our schools with the individual needs and levels at which the current policy has been implemented. An ad hoc committee will meet this month to address the individual needs and support for the high schools. The addition of the administrative regulation and exhibits will greatly improve the school's ability to implement the goals. For example, the AR gives specific guidelines on nutrition requirements for food sold on campus to students during the school day, found in Exhibit 5030.2. Next steps include notifying schools, students, parents, and the community of the revised policy. The Healthy Hunger Free Kids Act requires periodic measurement of the progress. Our committee's advisement is to complete the annual student wellness evaluation form, Exhibit 5030.1, on an annual basis. The committee will report to the board on an annual basis with data collected from the evaluation forms. The committee recognizes that an evaluation tool is new for the district and saw that it was important to make this an annual practice to reinforce the priority of compliance with the policy requirements. We thank you for your time this evening and are happy to answer any questions from the board or the public.
I have some real problems with the wellness thing. For one thing, it shifts the responsibility of health to the schools and away from the parents. Okay, that bothers me. Also, I read your notes here, and having taught high school all these years, if the kid eats good lunch, some of the rewards he gets is no homework pass. He gets extra reading time. He gets to eat lunch outside, more computer time, free time at the end of class, okay, extra credit opportunities. What kind of reward is this? If you eat what we give you, you have less homework. You don't have to do anything. You can sit at the computer longer, right? We think we maybe ought to review some of these things. Anyway, I'm sure that this is a policy. Like I said, it's a thing we're shifting the responsibility of everything to the school system. So if a kid gets ill, it's because the school system didn't give me the right food, make me eat it, because I threw it in the trash can. And I see that all the time on campus, where kids throw away the nutritious stuff and then go get a candy bar out of their locker. But anyway, it's just one of those things. I know that student wellness is a major concern. Taking away the responsibility are accepting the responsibility into the school system, it's going to be like, I worried the girl who graduated years back and said she couldn't read. Cost that district 2 more years to teach her how to read after she had graduated. So we're taking on that responsibility ourselves. Anyway, those were just some comments. Having taught high school for a while, I thought a no homework pass wouldn't be the great idea. Any other comments?
You brought up some good points, actually.
Is there a motion?
Make a motion to close the public hearing.
Close the public hearing. Mr. Harris, is there a second?
Second.
Okay, seconded by Mr. Crawford. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Okay. Now we have the motion to approve the revisions to Board Policy 5030. Is there a motion? Okay, Mr. Denable moves to accept the change. Is there a second? Second by Mr. Rasmussen. All those in favor? Okay, six yes, one no. Okay, that brings us to Facility and Energy Management Department. Agree with utility management services for utility management software, and that probably goes to discussion there.
Yeah, just quickly, it's just the software we have so we can monitor all our different utility expenses. I know the board, when we had brought up the whole energy management prospect and our different plans, they wanted to provide incentives to school sites. This will allow us to create a baseline and from that baseline see improvements and incentivize the schools to improve energy management. Where we go from there, obviously, we'll see, but this will give us that baseline tool to institute an energy management program for the district.
Okay. My only question for this is the 4 hours of online training for MJUSD, two-hour sessions. Who's going to do the? Who do we have that's going to train for that?
Facilities and Energy Management Department personnel.
All right, so we'll have a couple people. Okay. Any discussion? Further discussion? Okay. Is there a motion? Jim. Jim moves to approve. Second. Second to Mr. Danable. All those in favor? Aye. Looks like unanimous. Okay, item two, Facilities and Energy Management Department continued. Project authorization for number 19 for professional services for fencing at Covalot. Any discussion? They're looking forward to that. If not,
so move.
Okay, is there a second?
Second.
Okay, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay.
Aye.
Mr. Harris was the second.
Yes.
Okay. Item three, project authorization number 20 for professional services for wastewater repair at Foothill School. Any discussion? If not, the board will entertain a motion. Moved to approve by Mr. Boob. Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Danable. All those in favor?
Aye.
Unanimous. Okay. Number four, item number four. Proposal with Mid-Pacific Engineering Company for concrete testing and inspection services for the LHS shade canopy footings. Okay, any discussion? I was wondering, is this a local company that's going to do this, or... I've never heard of them before. Okay. That's all I had.
Sacramento.
Okay. If no further discussion, would somebody like to make a motion?
I'll make that
Mr.
motion.
Mr. Crawford moves to accept item four. Is there a second? Seconded by Mr. Fleury. All those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Okay, unanimous. Personnel Services, number one. then we might be, this is for classified particular kinds of service, PKS, to be eliminated. Okay, I'd like to open that up for discussion. Okay. I think we're probably pretty well informed on this item. The board will entertain a motion to approve.
I'll make the motion.
Oh, Mr. Denholm makes the motion to approve. Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Harris. Okay. All those in favor, please raise your hands.
Aye.
Okay.
No.
Okay. So six yes, one no, Mr. Crawford. Okay. Business services number one, second interim budget. Okay.
Good evening, board members, and those in the audience that stayed for the financial information. I do appreciate it. So I'd like to present our second interim financial report, and this will give an update, the second update we've given to the year since we adopted the budget way back in June. And we actually also provided an update in September regarding our district budget, but that was the unaudited actuals and finishing the prior school year, 13-14. So this is the second update we've given since we adopted the 14-15 budget. As you can see, and I present this slide every time we have a financial report, the budget process, the budget reporting cycle is ongoing. It's constantly evolving. And we adopt the budget in July. Well, it starts July 1st, and we're constantly updating and making adjustments. So right now we're in the March. We have the second interim financial report. We're going to get the preliminary LCAP in the budget for next year as we move into next year. May revise will come out from the state governor, any changes to his January proposal, and then we'll incorporate that, adopt the LCAP and budget in June with our dual meetings, and start another year. So we're getting closer to the end of this year and how we're finishing. So where are we at? On the revenue side, the beginning last year we had a 12% of the gap funding percentage, and it's lower than the 29.15 you'll see in 14-15, but again, the gap was much bigger. So as the gap closes, the bigger percentage, not necessarily more money. But this year was the highest in terms of additional revenue. It was, the original estimate was 29.56, and it's down to 29.15. We won't know the actual until we finish the year. And next year, the big change is you see the 32.19, and that was out of the governor's budget proposal in January, which I gave the board an update at that time. The one in 16-17, that is the one we use from school services. Best guess, we don't know what that percentage is actually going to be. Overall, you can see 81% of our revenue does come from LCFF, or local control funding formula. So that's our big driver in terms of what we can do on the expenditure side. There wasn't much changes since first interim in terms of our revenue. We got a little bit more on the federal side, one-time money, but not much there. We're pretty much consistently staying the same as what we reported. On the expenditure side, you can see, again, 77% goes to employee-related expenses, and we have other funds. Sometimes books and supplies, sometimes it gets thrown in there because we have carryover and restricted, so that's not truly what we spend. But for the most part, you know, a good three-fourths to four-fifths of our budget is always spent on people. And there have been some changes here. The classified salaries went up. As I get into the assumptions on the multi-year, we had some of those increases that we had through bargaining, through tentative agreements. They're small in the benefits. That just depends on hiring people. That's a small inertia. Books and supplies, again, small. It could be moved from air. As you see, the services and operating expenses went down. Sometimes that moves between major object areas. The big change you'll see is capital outlay, and that is because we've encumbered and or assigned the funds related to all the one-time facility projects we're doing, including the security cameras and the new ones for this year. And I'll go through those a little bit more detail, but that was the big change since first interim. Another thing I like to show is to really show the impact of what our true surplus is. You know, we talk about any fund balance and how much money the district has. Well, any fund balance is one-time money. So I like to follow what is the recurring ongoing expenses and what are the one-time money, because once you spend one-time money, it's gone forever. Ongoing expenses should match to ongoing revenues. You should have ongoing revenues that pay for those ongoing expenses. And you'll see it's actually kind of a positive thing for the ongoing surplus of the district. We started at 2.67 in first interim, and you'll see at the very bottom it goes down to 1.27. You're like, well, you know, we lost 1.4 million of our surplus. Not really, because even though we're spending 1.22 million in one-time adjustments, which include mostly those general fund first-time expenditures and a couple little added things that came over, like carryover that we didn't originally budget, but now we do have in there. Those are one-time. They're only going to recur once. Once they're done, they're done. I mean, they're not going to keep an expense item on the budget. The real changes are on the top on those ongoing adjustments. We did some salary and benefits net savings, just adjustments that we've been making in our budget and tightening up our budget. But at the same time, we have spent a little bit more in terms of, well, our revenue went down on LCFF, I explained. The gap percentage went from 29.56 to 29.15. There was a small decrease in local revenue, which is part of our total revenue pool. Some increased contributions to service our special education students. And then the salary increases for both CSEA and AMACE. AMACE is the 3% from the original tentative agreement. CSEA is the 4.4%. And an increase in some of the student discipline to implement some of the PBIS program initiatives. So the real change is you go from 2.67, and our real ongoing surplus that we show is 2.49 million. That's the reality of what our surplus is and what we have available to spend and still balance our budget, not negatively spend. Even if you see an overall on the unrestricted side, this really focuses on unrestricted because restricted, again, is for a purpose, some it carries over, or there's deferred revenue. On the unrestricted side, which is what's available for any purpose and really truly defines local control, that's what we have available to spend on anything. And that will, if we don't expend that by the end of the year, that ongoing surplus will carry forward next year, and that becomes available in addition to any additional revenue over rising expenses. And I'll get into that in the multi-year. So that's where we're at right now. It's really about 2.5 million surplus. Again, here's the ending fund balance, and you know, without going into specific detail, about half of it is assigned and or for a purpose, half of it isn't. Again, as we do one-time projects, there's ways we've spent down some of the ending fund balance this year. The ending fund balance will increase if we don't do the one ongoing items to balance our budget, but they're still part of the year, and hopefully we'll expend those items. Some of the assumptions as we start looking forward into 15-16 and 16-17, as well as finishing this year, you'll see I highlighted some of the key areas. One is average daily attendance. You can see we have it projected to go down. What's happened since we did the January update is we finished our enrollment projections. We've reflected that in the budget, so the enrollment projection, given our past history of attendance, we paired that up to see what we actually yield in terms of attendance from our enrollment. And it's going down. That's going to decrease revenue somewhat. You'll see the LCFF gap funding, and I mentioned that already. One was decreased, and we do have a solid number for 15-16. Whereas 16-17, actually what we use in the projection is the school services. The one I showed you on the other screen, I apologize, was the Department of Finance. They have differing. For the projections, we always use the conservative. It will be something different. 16-17 is very hard to predict right now, so I know it won't be correct. But we do have the number that the governor came out with, 15-16. Benefits, you'll see the reason I highlighted that is a reminder that the STIRS and PERS rates are going up significantly for the employer. So 8.88 this year, that's going to go up to 10.71. There's no separate funding strand for that. And then it goes up to 12.58 PERS. 11, we do know this. This is what's been planned out. 11.771 to 12.6 to 15 for PERS. That's a real expense. There's been a lot of lobbying. There's a coalition, too, with a lot of school districts that are like, well, we're getting this new dollars for local control. We're supposed to be bringing back programs or adding new programs or adding services for our students or, you know, working with our staff. And that money's being eaten up by the LCFF dollars. There's no separate funding for that. So that's been a big bone of contention with the state, and it's important to point out. The last one, too, is, and I mentioned it, is the negotiated salary increases. 4% for CSEA is in the 14-15 budget, with 3% for AMACE. 4% for the CSEA groups, the two CSEA groups, are in 15-16. As we negotiate and other things, we'll put them into the budget. But again, if those items don't get negotiated this year, that will show in the surplus if we don't expend the monies this year. Another thing you'll see at first interim, second interim, my apologies, it shows a $0.7 million deficit spending. Again, that's not the true deficit of the district. We're spending down our surplus in terms of one-time items, and then the restricted items, because this is looking at the total picture, show a negative balance because those monies won't be expended until 15-16. So reality, you see a 0.7 this year, and you go, well, we're deficit. No, we're not. Our true ongoing surplus is still about $2.5 million. What happens in the out years, like 15-16, is pretty accurate because we have the gap funding percentage. That does show $5.8 million increase. That, with some of the restricted, but really on the unrestricted side, it's about $6.7 million increase in LCFF funding for next year. Originally, I reported 7.1. Reason it went down, we projected ADA to be lower. So now that we have the $6.7 million, like I explained in January, we still have to take out for all the rising costs. So step and column, those benefits increases I mentioned with the $400,000 we know we have to commit for the ROP program to start gradually bringing that back, as well as the $580,000 for routine restricted maintenance account that's by operational laws coming back next year. Even with those expenses and everything, we project the actual surplus on the unrestricted side will be about $4.5 million. So depending on how we spend that, whether it be through negotiated process or through the LCAP process, that's about what's available. That's the true amount for next year. 16-17, don't know. But this is a requirement to do our multi-year projection, still under Assembly Bill 1200, and it's monitored by the county. We do perform it, but I do like to let you know about the true picture and what we really have available to help our students. So with that said, you know, really we're not, again, we're trying to balance our budget, but it takes, you know, collaboration amongst many parties. We want to spend the current surplus to improve or increase services for students. I think that's our intention. And the negotiations are ongoing, obviously, and we're trying to make any other operational adjustments ongoing. And we have made some, as you see, adjusting the budget for student discipline and whatnot. Last year we projected actually close to a balanced budget last year, give or take a couple hundred thousand. We ended up $671,000 above. That's because you budget to balance, but sometimes you don't spend every line item. That's what you do in public entities. You spend what you think, and we tighten it up and we try to make it as close as possible. But that money is already going to be expended. We actually spent about $688,000 that we have currently budgeted for the South Lyndhurst Potable Addition to house the combined continuation school next year, the Kovalod 7th Street Fencing Project, to enclose that elementary campus during the school day and a little bit after, the two new special education buses that we desperately need, a nutrition services delivery truck that we desperately need to provide services, and also the pool filter at Marysville High School. We'll continue to look at items in terms of one time in nature, basically things that aren't going to be recurring every year. These things, you know, it takes many years in between. And so at the same time we're finishing out this 14-15 year and we have a lot of responsibilities to get done before June 30th, we're already working and building, obviously, towards our LCAP and adopted budget. So if you look at the budget calendar for the rest of the year, and this is this year's budget calendar, but again, we're working on both items. We have the second LCAP budget committee meeting, which is open to the public on Thursday. And in that meeting, we're going to help develop our survey and really get input from stakeholders on how we expend the additional dollars we do have, especially as we move into 15-16. We obviously have an adopted LCAP for 14-15. The second one was in February. The third one is on March 12th. I apologize. Second interim is being presented tonight. Fourth one is in April. April 23rd is actually the fourth LCAP budget meeting. And that's where we hopefully get the results, and those results will be the recommendations that go to our superintendent. And we'll try to work on the draft of the LCAP and finish that by May. And we'll also visit with staff, parents, and community as necessary to share the LCAP because there are some requirements in terms of shareholder engagement and making sure people are aware of that. And we'll continue that on until May. Governor's May revise will come. We'll build everything into the budget for 15-16 that has come from that LCAP planning process, as well as any other occurrences that have occurred for the 14-15 year to increase or improve services. Bring the LCAP and budget to the board, have a public hearing, and then adopt it the next meeting. And eventually the state will adopt their final budget for 15-16. We'll incorporate any changes and move forward through this process as we do every year. So overall, we are doing what we can to balance the budget. Use some of the one-time money in the Indy Fund balance, and you know, hopefully we'll resolve those things and move forward to add more services because it looks good for 15-16. There's going to be about $4.5 million in unrestricted money to do, you know, what we see as best help students. With that, thank you for the time, and I'll open it up to questions.
Okay. Any questions? Okay, the board will entertain a motion to approve business services number one.
Mr. Rex, I did have a question.
Oh, okay.
I was a little slow on it, but...
That's okay, I'm running a little slow myself.
Mr. DiGiulio, what...
Yes, Mr. Ressos.
Is ending balance... How much reserve do we have? Is reserve and one of these other terminologies the same thing?
Ending fund balance is what they consider your general fund reserve. So that's right here. So that's the 12 point, what we project at the end of the year is 12.571 million. That's with the current surplus and how things are going. We keep 30,000 in revolving cash, our estimated ending inventory, that's our warehouse, 425. Some of it is restricted, so it's for federal programs that will carry over and or be recognized as deferred revenue. It's just an accounting term. Some are already assigned. There's the 3% economic uncertainty that is required by the state. About half of it is unassigned. What we decide to do with it is up to us. Typically, when you have an economic downturn, only 3% is required by the state. But depending on, there's a lot of debate about what's the appropriate level. Obviously, if you have more, it will give you more time, if there is an economic downturn, to make adjustments and not have, you know, just a massive amount of cuts at the beginning. But there's also the counter argument of having, you know, you want to balance your budget so that you're not building that grant. So really our focus is to not necessarily raise this. Obviously, if you balance the budget and it raises $671,000 like last year, that's fine. But we're expending that money. So it's trying to find that appropriate middle ground with the ending fund balance. The thing you can't do, though, with ending fund balance, and I said, it's one-time money. Because once it goes down there, you have to look at your ongoing expenses versus your ongoing revenue. Your ongoing expenses should not exceed your ongoing revenue. Then your deficit spending, and then that's what starts creating problems on the ongoing side. Once it goes into the ending fund balance, even if it's created by a surplus, if you eliminate that surplus, then that surplus no longer exists. One-time money, you spend it, it goes down. Salaries, benefits, those things are not one-time in nature. They're recurring, so... It's trying to balance that budget on the ongoing side that will affect this, but it's the appropriate use of funds.
I think a lot of times people don't understand that the community wants to reinstate programs like our auto shop program and our metal shop or machine shops, and those are very expensive programs. Even to bring back, which has taken us 3 years to bring back ROTC, and actually the money that you showed up there, our income, really is about the same now as it was in 2007.
Yeah,
so and everything costs more to purchase.
If we didn't get additional revenue every year, right now, based on our current expenses, it takes almost $2 million every year to increase. It's just the cost of doing business within all the different rates and inflationary pressures. You know, that if you got the same flat revenue, you have to make $2 million in cuts the next year to balance your budget. So that's why when I say $6.7 million, we talk about everything we're doing, it ends up becoming about $4.5 million of actual money that we have to spend on new items, additional items. And for us, from the finance side, at least on the business side, again, there are a multitude of things the board will ultimately decide to do. Our advice is just to make sure you balance the budget.
Thank you. Okay, is there a motion to approve?
So moved.
Okay, Mr. Crawford moves. Second? Mr. Rasmussen? All those in favor, please raise your hands.
Aye.
Okay, that's unanimous. I'm going to close the board meeting in memory of Dorothy Otto. A longtime member of our district in the
high school here.
She made it to 104.
Carol Miller's former mother-in-law.
Boy, I bet there'd be a celebration of life for that one. If I get there, celebrate. Hey, thanks for being here.